Tomorrow.
I didn't question when he went to,
Oh, thanks, Andrea. Okay, that's a very good question. That's the question. Now, God goes to two commandments. So God told him to sacrifice his son, so he didn't question. Well, God says he's going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah and the other three cities, right? So he said, he asked, he questioned God. What did he say?
Well,
the city should, justice demands that the Sodom city should change the verdict.
So,
Contrary, over his only side. Over there, we're showing too, so say, look, God says, isn't that Western City exists? It's
like a million dollars.
At the time.
It's like
a Ram and Chazal. That's the case, is it was a bigger thing than the party Yitzchak to give himself up than Avram. We don't find it. We're in the passing question about Yitzchak's Gabbos. Yeah, killing a tzaddik. The other day he says you can't kill all sinners because it's like, you can't kill all sinners.
I think.
What? His question about justice, the fact that this action, he interpreted this action to be one which would be detrimental to them.
Or?
You see? Or was it because. Or was it because he felt, not because he felt it was going to be detrimental to them, he felt that God was doing an action which would be beneficial to them, and he didn't understand what the benefit was.
Well, is it a question that he
did? Was it a benefit or not?
Okay.
Forget about what's going to happen in 1,000 years from now. But as far as those people are concerned, did he interpret the action as a beneficial action or non-beneficial action? In other words, was the action of God considered at that point a non-beneficial action or a beneficial action?
Definitely not.
That there was a, in other words, you're removing benefits from them, right?
Right. No, the question would be whether they're removing benefits.
It's a non-beneficial action, right?
That's right. I'm going to understand how it was a...
Right?
Right. Okay.
And in reality, was there any benefit for them?
No.
No. That was clear, that there would be no benefit for them. Right? So Avram was, what was one second? So that's what I said. So in other words, Avram's question was, how can God do a non-beneficial action in this situation? Right?
Right.
Is that true? Right? In other words, how could
no benefit?
He knew that there's no benefit in the action, not he saw. That's what I'm asking you. Was it the fact that he didn't understand where the benefit lies? Or he knew that there was no benefit in this action? That was clear, given. There's no benefit in this action to these people. There's two possibilities. A judge can kill a guy. A judge can kill a guy either because he thinks it's beneficial for the guy, right? Or else he thinks that there's no more benefit in this guy's existence, and therefore it's time for him to be destroyed because he has no benefit in his existence, right? Now we will have Avram understand Sodom. Do you understand Sodom? Because existence per se only has a value if there's benefit in existence. Just living is no value, right? Okay, now if you find a person that his life is worthless, so his life and death doesn't matter, because in terms of reality, there's no difference between his living and dying and being dead, right? Okay, now, what was Avram's question by Sodom? Was Avram's question by Sodom, what is the benefit that you're going to do to these people when you destroy them? Is that his question? I'd like to understand the benefit. Or his question was, this is an action which definitely has no benefit, but these people deserve a benefit. God was doing an action that was going to benefit the people of Sodom. And Avram's question was, I'd like to know how this benefits them. Or else it was agreed between God and Avram. They both agreed that this action will not benefit them in any way. In other words, that at this point, the end of all benefit for those people has come before God, and God decided there is no more reason for their existence because there is no possible benefit for their existence. And Avram's question was, no, that there is a benefit for their existence. Right? Okay? In one case, it's a qualitative argument. That's the second case. In the other case, it's a quantitative argument. In other words, they both agree that Avram agrees with God, that there's a benefit here. The question is, which benefit? Right. Okay? So what was this question? Was this question, I don't see the benefit? Or was this question over here, that this is an injustice?
No.
The question was injustice. Right? And I'll tell you why. It's a good reason why. Because how a benefit takes place to a specific individual through specific means is not in the area of man's knowledge. It's outside the realm of man's knowledge. That only God knows. Just like only God could formulate the mitzvahs. To know that this is the best way for the Christian to put on tefillin. Or the best way for a person to have a cognizance and awareness of God is to put on tefillin every day, and in the tefillin is the parshas, is the way that, that's the way to bring it about. I said, I don't understand how, why, Yeah, a lot of questions. People have a lot of questions. But that's not a question that the man can ask, because that's the area might involve more than man could is capable of understanding, how the particular meanings take place. That's why it wasn't a quantitative question. The quantitative factor cannot be known to man. But there's another question. The question was the qualitative question. Here people deserve justice, right? These people deserve benefit in their existence. There's 50 tzaddikim in the city, right? So how can you do an injustice? That's a qualitative question.
So what's the injustice?
That was the question Avraham asked. Avraham didn't ask the quantitative question. Quantitative is beyond his ken.
Injustice of these people can be turned around.
That's right. In other words, God is destroyed. No. He's saying that at this point there is no purpose in their existence. They're so distorted that their existence is worthless.
So what do you want to say the purpose was?
Right? I don't know what the purpose was, but he maintained that there was a purpose, there was a benefit in their existence. That's what he was maintaining. Hashem calls for Yasser Mishpat, that if the city is such, which it harbors, so such a city, there is a benefit in the existence of such a city. Okay? Right? So therefore, his question was a qualitative one, right? Right, now, let's go to the Akedah. Avraham interpret the act of that God
right.
commanded him to do. Did he interpret that God commanded him to do the action because Yitzchak has to be destroyed now? There's no more purpose in his existence. He is a Russia, and there's no reason why he should continue to exist. Is that the way he interpreted it? Or did he interpret it as a beneficial action? But the benefit of the action and how precisely the action was beneficial, he didn't understand. Which of the two?
That one.
It has to be the second way. It's impossible to be the first way. It's a mitzvah. Just like you say, he was a kid, so the mitzvah was like the Rambam says, and the mitzvah was on him. That was for his benefit. The question is, how is it for my benefit? That God knows how it's for your benefit. But definitely he didn't interpret it as an act of destruction. He understood there was a mitzvah. Now, the quantitative factor, we said, Avram can't ask. That's something which is beyond man's ken. How this is going to be a benefit is beyond man's ken. Right?
What do you like?
Now, this change essentially is one in the, practically, in the ability of the person to concentrate. And I think many times that's overlooked. In other words, people realize you have to work on it. Okay, so you have to do it. It's a thing, but really learning is a qualitative experience, a certain quality of the experience. And every effort should be made to approach the quality directly. And that quality is concentration, the ability to apply your mind with all its energy to a specific problem for a given amount of time. But just like other things in life require work and development, this area also requires work and development. And many times a person will go for years without realizing they have to develop in this area. Well, you approach it like you'd approach something else. Therefore, things will just let it go by and figure that automatically will be taken care of. The truth of the matter is that it doesn't work that way. That unless a person recognizes the shortcomings that he has in terms of his inability to concentrate and works on it with a conscious approach, he isn't going to improve very much. If he assumes that just by learning and listening to ideas he's going to improve in this area, that's a mistake, it's a fallacy. Therefore, a person must actually observe the amount of time that his attention span is capable of in the beginning, and then he must increase it steadily. All right, now, what you're working with in this instance is as follows. There are two things, you see. First of all, there's a certain tolerance, because the mind automatically, the imagination, starts operating. We'll get into that a little bit when we speak about automation. So that the energy goes into the imagination. And when you remove it from the imagination, it's painful, because you're removing energy from an area where it naturally flows. Now, this requires a certain amount of tolerance. This requires tolerance for the person to be able to tolerate the pain of not satisfying the imagination. That's one thing in concentration. There's another thing also. Another thing in concentration is simply, to give an example from the physical, would be just like the act of, let's say a person starts working on improving his stamina, physical stamina. So first he can run half a mile, then he increases it to run a mile, he keeps on increasing it. The same thing is true with the concentration, with the ability of the mind to concentrate. As a person works on it, it becomes increasingly stronger, and it can go for longer periods. Now, these two really have an inverse ratio. What do I mean? In other words, at first, the tolerance problem is a difficult problem, because the person can't really concentrate that much. So he's bothered with tolerating the constant push on the imagination. That's the first thing. But then after the person learns to concentrate to a greater degree, the tolerance is removed, because then he directs the energy into thought, and there's no need for tolerance anymore, because the energy is going into the area of thinking. You follow? Now, once this happens, then the tolerance keeps on being reduced, so that eventually he doesn't really feel any pain from the area of tolerance, you see, and he just enjoys, he gains the benefit of the enjoyment of the learning. The enjoyment of the learning can only begin when a person develops the ability to concentrate. Without that, there's no real enjoyment of learning. There's no real thinking. Because real thinking and any ideas that have been produced by any great minds in any areas only came after hours and hours of concentrated effort. And if you can't concentrate on a problem for hours without stopping, then you just can't, you're not using your mind. I mentioned also that in terms of learning doesn't suffer from weak minds. It's not because most people are not lambda, not because their mind is inferior. It's because they never really get to tap the resources of their mind. They don't use up even fractionally the amount of mind they have. And that's because they don't know how to concentrate. But if I want to mention that, as far as a person's stay in the yeshiva, a person should realize this is an opportunity, and I think it's the only opportunity that a person has in this society to work on in this area. And to really use all his efforts to develop this ability to concentrate and learn. And that's the really important thing that a person should do. Now, you can't go overboard. A person has to realize his limitations when he starts. If you can do concentration, when I say concentration, I mean total concentration, right, without stop. So a person should start off with a person who can't do much, start with 5 minutes, whatever it is, and constantly see how he's improving. But this is very important. When we go through evolution, I think we'll come back to this idea. We'll see exactly how it fits in with the old concept of Adam. Before I start Adam Rishon, I want to take one short thing from the Sedra, not from Adam Rishon. No, I'm taking this thing for a reason, because, you see, in Torah, what happens is, unfortunately, that when we're young, we go to yeshivas, so we read stories, you know, that occur in the Torah, and many times they take on in our mind somewhat like a connotation of like a fable or a story, and often it lays buried that way for years. And it's never revised. So that people grow up with an infantile idea of Torah, even though they could know Tosfos very well. But their basic ideas of a Chumash remain an infantile level. And this, of course, is a crime philosophically. One of the things that's often looked at in a way of a more or less like a fantasy tale, not that the person doesn't believe that it's true, but in his mind it's classified in one respect with the other stories. That is the story of Lot's wife. So I would just like to clarify that point. It's a short thing. I want to clarify it because it's one of those things that a person fails to revise and look into the Torah for the deep insight that the Torah offers. And instead, it leaves it as a little story. Okay, everybody knows that Lot's wife turned back. She made that fatal error. And she became a pillar of salt. Ah. But what is the real problem about? What really happened over there? First of all, we have to understand what was so bad about turning back. What was wrong with turning back? Correct? Yes.
And
you know,
the question, like, if you look
at
the Rashi over there,
okay. Oh, yeah, same ideology. Good point. Of course, also I don't think anybody would ever make that mistake again. I think after they read the Torah, right? Someone says, don't look back, they just, okay, that's it. Malachi, don't look back. But if only she would have known, I mean, with the seriousness of the result, then she wouldn't have to suffer. Okay, let's understand something. Really, what a Chazal says, Chazal tie it in, the fact that she became the Tziv Melach, they tie it into a something about a character. What was the thing about a character? Yes. Salt and guests. And the guests came to the house, so she gave them everything, but she omitted one item, which was salt. And therefore, to compensate for that, what is the main idea that Chazal are telling us? What's the main idea that Chazal are telling us? What's the concept that Chazal is saying? Oh, yeah. Neither can I neither. Neither can I neither. All right. Neither can I neither. Which means that somehow or other she was deserving. Somehow or other she was deserving of that anger. But it's interesting. I mean, so we have to tie in two factors. The fact that she didn't give the soul, and the fact that she turned back. Because the Pasuk says, that the reason was because he turned back. Cazal said the reason was because of assault. You know, I mean, which one was it? You see, the truth of the matter is as follows. The truth of the matter is that no one was supposed to remain from Saddam. That was the Gezera. The Gezera was nobody of Saddam, no citizen of Saddam was to remain alive. That was the whole concept of destroying Saddam. All right. Now, how come Lo was saved? Lo was saved? Okay. Lo was saved. It says no citizen of Saddam is supposed to remain alive, so we see Lo got out. Correct? What's the answer? The answer is that Lo really wasn't truly a citizen of Saddam. What's the raya that Lo wasn't a citizen of Saddam? What's the raya? What's the raya? Saddam was not known for their need of Gemilas Chasadim, right? And yet you see, when the Malachim came, so not only took them into his house, and he gave them matzes off of Vayaslan Mishnah, matzes off of Vayachelu, fresh bread he made for them, right? Oh. But not only that, which seems to be that would seem to indicate that he's not a citizen of Saddam right there. But even further, it says that when they came on the door, they attacked him, they wanted to come in. So he did something which, I mean, to us sounds like going a little bit overboard with Chassid. He stayed for this. Hashem lo yadu ish. Etzion ha'echan aleichem v'atzul lohen, katev bein eichem. Hashem lo'el al tatsu dobo. Yalkin bo v'tzel terasi. Right? Hard to understand what type, hard to understand the nature of a man. I mean, that's where we're, what about Chesed to his daughter? The truth of the matter is this. The truth of the matter is, what was Lake's, of course, Chazal criticized it, says the Mishigas. But the man wasn't insane. In other words, the man wasn't an insane individual. He learned from Avraham Avinu. What was really his nature? Lake's nature. What was his concept, his philosophy? He had a certain philosophy, right? What was his philosophy? In one respect, he learned from Avraham, in another respect, he didn't. What's the answer? You see, insofar as Gemilas Chassadim is concerned, this he took everything from Avraham, completely. But one thing he didn't have from Avraham. What didn't he take from Avraham? Kedusha. See? Chesed he took. Kedusha he didn't take. And if Chesed, without Kedusha, what he did was 100% logical. 100% logical. It says, Vayehal ad Tadayim. So I thought, why did he go to Tadayim? Vayehal ad Tadayim? Because he liked one thing about Tadayim. What did he like about Tadayim? The priestess. Exactly. The priestess. Stufezimah. He liked the fact that they were priestess. So really, his philosophy was like this. Goodness and kindness is very important. This he got from Avraham. But to have sexual restrictions, I mean, why? 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 I mean, what's the purpose of this? So really, he was very much in line. Again, he was very much in line with the current philosophy. I mean, the current philosophy is a person should be kind to his neighbor, do everything he is kind. But sexual restrictions, I mean, why should you have that? As a matter of fact, there's one philosopher, a great philosopher, who wrote that he was writing about his mother, what a virtuous woman she was. And he says that there was someone who was a friend of the family, and he couldn't get married, so he had a problem. So his mother, out of chesed, helped him out. Now, logically, now I want you to understand that logically, there's nothing wrong with it. If you follow the concept straight through, why? If there's chesed in one thing, we should be chesed in something else too, correct? Correct? The only thing is, that a person that does that denies the whole concept of Kedusha. He doesn't understand the whole concept of Kedusha. You see? Now, therefore, Lot, really, within his philosophy, he wasn't crazy. I want you to understand. Within his philosophy, he was not a crazy man. The Torah doesn't mention Lot that he was a crazy man. Stam Mishnah and Torah doesn't talk about it. So Lot was very consistent in his philosophy. Very consistent. Really, he held that insofar as he's concerned, that his daughters are obligated as well. It wasn't that he threw his daughters out. He felt that they're obligated to do this, to take part in this act of Gemilas Chesed. I, the pastor, said, well, you know, when you are, such a promise good, there's nothing wrong with it. So why not? Why not express Chesed in this way as well? You see? The difference between him and between Avram was in one thing. One thing. What was the difference? So the difference was as follows. Insofar as Avram concerned, chesed for Avram was not an end in itself. What was Avram's chesed for? What was chesed for Avram? Why? Justice. Correct. The chesed of Avram's chesed is tied with one thing, with Ahavas Hashem. And Ahavas Hashem is impossible if a person is shut up in Taiva. See, Ahavas Hashem demands, because Ahavas Hashem is definition of Chochmas Hashem. And therefore, the chesed of Avram was based on was operating on a totally different center. You follow? Avram's chesed orbiting on a totally different center. Lot could never perceive that center. So to Lot, chesed just had a plain emotional basis. So that's good. You must be good. This he got from Avram, and he followed it too consistently. If you must be good to your friend, and you must sacrifice and give him your food, so you must sacrifice in every area as well. You follow? But it had nothing to do with Ahavas Hashem. So chesed he learned, but he didn't learn the secret of chesed, the main underlying factor of chesed. The main underlying factor of chesed is everything is unified in Ahavas Hashem. And Ahavas Hashem outrules sexuality without limitations. It is mechayev a person in kedusha, it's mechayev a person in chesed. He didn't understand that center around which all these things orbit. You understand? To him, the center was simply emotional goodness. Emotional goodness, that's today's philosophy. Emotional goodness is very fine, so what emotional goodness? Be good in this way, and be good as far as sexuality is concerned, also sacrifice in all areas. That was Lake's philosophy. But Lake's philosophy, as wrong as it was, still, it did one thing. It removed him from what? From being a citizen of Zion. Okay. So that's why Lake could be saved. That's why Lake could be saved. Now, you see, that was Lake. But his wife was a problem. Why? Because his wife, when Chazal say that she didn't give the salt, what does it mean that she didn't give the salt? What does it mean? It means that that she was very reluctant. She really didn't want to do chesed. She had to do chesed, but Lake was the boss. But she really herself, she had a little bit of viciousness. She couldn't really stand if somebody enjoyed something. That's midas dain. That's what Chazal called midas dain. So really, Lot's wife had in her some of the characteristics of Sodom. But somehow or other, she was like an in-between individual. She could go either way. So what did the Malachim do? What did the Malachim do? What did they do? They gave her a test, exactly. They gave her a test. Now, you see, I want you to understand that you mustn't read, in this case, read the results of the story and then read into the original. To the first command that the Malachim gave. In other words, you take a look later, you see, don't look, she looks at the candle, throw it off. The Malachim didn't tell her what's going to happen if she looks. They didn't say, you must not look, otherwise you're going to die. You see? All they gave her a command. Why? Because this command was an opportunity for her to accomplish something in her personal life. And the reason why she died was because she failed to accomplish this thing. You see? Now, what was it that she was supposed to do? They said, don't look back. Why? What does looking back have to do with it? What's the concept? What would happen if she looked back? What does looking back mean? Why does a person look back? Let's say, for instance, a person is running away from a tragedy that occurs to a very close relative. Or a person is very close to them. Why does it look back? Exactly right. Because the person identifies with the situation. You see, the curiosity is one of identification because you identify with those people. And therefore you say, what happened to them? That could have been me. Right? So Lloyd's wife had one. This was her opportunity to see whether she would be a citizen of Sodom or whether she can really change her nature, extricate herself from the philosophy of Sodom, and become a new person. What was the test? What was the test? Or the test? If she looked back. If the moment she looks back, it means that what's the curiosity? The curiosity is because what? Because she identifies those people, what's happening to them. So when they warned her, really in the warning was one thing. that you had a chance, it's not a matter of turning your head around, looking, the physical looking back. The looking back is a reflection of the whole individual. If she could, that's why I said, go and just go, and I'll try, don't look, go with that. I didn't say make a point out of the looking back. You understand what I mean? They said, go and get out of there, which means if you could really get out of this place and feel like you're leaving, you have nothing to do with this game, and you're not interested in this game, they're not part of you, then you'll go, then you'll make it. But if you don't, you see, although I'm not saying we emphasize that if you don't, it's still easy to do it now, because then it would take away the whole idea of the Bechira. You follow? Because then it would make it into an action. It's not just an action of looking back. This was a test to see where the person is. So therefore, if the person leaves them with the idea that they're leaving it, and it's in the past, it's behind them, they don't have anything to do with it, then they can leave. But if they turn around, so then it means they're part of Sudan. That was the thing. She couldn't break the identification. And since she couldn't break the identification, so what happened was that she died. That's the shot in the Hazal and the Pasuk. Not two different reasons. It's one reason. The fact that she couldn't give Melach and the fact that she looked back is the exact same thing. She couldn't give Melach because she was dying, and she looked back because she couldn't break the identification. The moment she couldn't break the identification, then she was five missing. Now, you think it's interesting in the Pasuk. In the Pasuk, it says when she left, so it says that, mention the order of things. Vatabe ishte me'achra, vatahi yitziv Noach. Then the next Pasuk, vayashke ma'achram ba'baitri ala mokam asher omar chamas p'nei reshim, vayashke fal p'nei sedayim v'amay ra, val kol p'nei eretz hakikra, vayad, v'hine ola kito ha'oretz kito ha'kivshon. You see, Avram also looked at Sedayim. So you have two people who are looking. She looked, and he looked. Well, what's the difference? You see, her looking was simply a personal thing. Just curiosity, personal thing, because that was close to her. She would have died. So she's looking what happened to them, and she was safe. Correct? That's what Rashi means. You don't deserve it. You don't deserve it means that you're looking back that you are being saved and they're being destroyed when you're really a part of them, then you're higher reason. Okay? But Avram's looking was a different looking. Why? Because his was the objective looking, not personal, not subjective, it was objective. To take a look to see the justice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's a totally different, that's a different habot, that's Hashkafa, by Yashke. It took a look into the situation. Hashkafa always means to look into it, to understand, to analyze, why were these people Chayav Nisa? What exactly is the limit of justice that HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught? That's an objective Hashkafa. You see, hers was just a personal one. She was Chayav Nisa for her looking. Abram, on the contrary, was a looking of chesed. Okay. So we compared today's philosophy to that one, to Lloyd's, and the comparison really is not a total equation, because at least Lloyd was consistent in his shita. He was consistent, even though it was something which was painful to him to do, throw his daughters out. Because he's a heartless man, and he was a normal individual, and I don't find any way that he had an abnormal psyche. So it was a hard thing for him to do. But he did it because he really, in other words, was consistent in the Shita of Chesed. Whereas today, in today's world, I mean, it's not a matter of there's no consistency at all. It's just like whenever you want, you use whatever you want when you want. That's not a philosophy. And this, I just wanted to point out from the aspect of the emotional attachment. See, that it's not, that it's a condition is nullified, and you have the concept of being good, that's accepted. Yeah. But his was a consistent shita. His was consistent. On the contrary, the whole incident of Leighton's his daughter showed that he was a Moshe Nefesh, what he believed in. He thought the chesed, so therefore he went all the way. Anything? But in today's world, we don't find that. We don't find any consistency there. There's no question about it. Yes. No ideas. Every one of these stories is an idea, a concept. It's not there for history. It's there for a limud. And you must always remember that those childish ideas you have must be revived. And you know, if you don't do it, again, if you don't make a conscious effort, it just slips by, and you remain with it. I think this is important. This idea in Chumash is important because the worst thing that we could do is to read the Chumash in the same way that it was taught to us when we were children. First of all, at that level, I mean, as a child, you have very low level of understanding, and also because the way it was taught. But the area that is a very wide area, it's a big area and it's an important area, and most people have a very shallow conception of it, is the area of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the area that we've been doing the last couple of weeks. And the whole question of what was happening with the Pyro. I mean, Pyro calls the Khatumim, and then it's, it looks like basically most people think it's a question of whose magic is better, ours or theirs. I mean, that's the basic question in the Torah. And I just want a very short point. I guess many of you have an understanding of this already, but in case you don't, I think it's an important point. The question, what we have to understand is what was really Moshe Rabbeinu trying to show Pyro? What was going on there? So really, of course, you see in the Torah, you have a pasuk where Moshe Rabbeinu is God. He says, what name should I use? What should I... And the Rambam explains that the name means not just a name, because he says, it can't just be a name, because we're just a name, so if they knew the name, he'd know the name. And if he knew a name that they didn't know, so what proof is that? He made up a name. So what do you mean? It's a concept. And the pasuk is clear, it's a concept. Ekya asher ekya means... It, without going into it in detail, it means, of course, the word ekya means I will be. It's a shem Hashem, that's what I'm saying. It means I will be. To say I will be is an impossibility, because if you will be, then you aren't now. So you can't say I now will be. What it implies is that there's no change in God. That's what it implies. There's no change in God. It has the idea of no change. And that was that's the main idea. I mean, it's in Yadas. Ani Hashem lo shanisi. It's a pasuk. So really what Moshe Rabbeinu and Yudke Vovke is tied into that, the Rambam is not explicit about it, but it has something to do with God's existence and the fact that he's unchangeable. So Moshe Rabbeinu, this was the idea, and it's an open pasuk. I mean, you can see it straight in the pasuk. Anyone who just reads the pasuk plain, you see that this is a metaphysical pasuk. Usually the pasuk is written Kederach B'nei Adam. But over here, it can't be, because over here, what the Torah is trying to get across is to people, to everybody, is that there is a metaphysical idea. And that's why you have this strange phrase, Ekya Asher Ekya. So, really, the Rav one time asked, or Salvage one time asked, when the Jews went to Paro, so they said, Derech Shloshes Yom Nelech Levin, let's go, we're going to go away for 3 days in the desert. So what was this? A ruse? I mean, this was a game? Let's say Paro says, sure, go away for 3 days and then come right back. And get back to work for the next year. What are they going to do then? So the Rav said no. He says that that you see later it says that when he wanted to let them go, he said, first was B'nai Reina of the Kanein Alech, first he objected to who's going, Niv Miahochem, then finally gave in to that too. He said no. Gamata tishlach v'yaditim v'yadenes vachem v'olos v'zavachten l'Hashem alakeinu. No, you have to give us sacrifices. Not enough. You have to give us sacrifices, and we're going to take your sacrifices and sacrifice to our God. That's a little bit being unreasonable. I mean, you want to go yourself to sacrifice to your God? Take 3 days. All right, Paro thought it was just they wanted a vacation. But so they say, no, they're serious. Fine. But to ask Paro to give his vachem v'olos, it sounds like it's going too far. So what's the pshat? The pshat was like this: that really God's plan initially was that, you see, when Moshe Rabbeinu, when Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to God, so Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to know what idea he should convey, and conveying an idea means he had to consult God. Which idea? The idea, of course, he had the idea, but the question is which idea is the proper idea for the people at the time, what level, and how to express it. And really, Moshe Rabbeinu went to Paro. He explained to Paro about God. When he went to the Klal Yisrael, he explained to Klal Yisrael about God. He explained to them the idea of a God that's unchangeable and a God that's a source of reality. And that's why you see at one point Paro says, Lo yadati es Hashem. V'gam es Yisrael v'ashnech. I don't know God. What does it mean I don't know God? What do you mean? All of a sudden he doesn't know God. What he meant was that Moshe Rabbeinu explained to him the idea of God. And the idea of God was that God is a source of reality. And all the magic that you have is false, because this is just an attempt to project your own crazy emotions onto reality. But there is a real reality, and there's a source for that reality, and that is God. So he tried to show them a different idea. So that's why Paro says, Lo yadati es Hashem. Lo yadati es Hashem means I don't know God. It means I can only relate to a God that is emotional. I can't relate to this. He got fed up. He said, I can't relate to this idea of God. It's abstract God. The idea of a God that we can't define, that there's no definition to, that we have no positive concept of. He says, this is out of my realm of
I can't associate mentally. I can't think of such a thing. This idea is alien to me. Says lo yadat is Hashem. I don't know anything about this. That's what he meant. So you see, really, when Moshe Rabbeinu went to Paro, was an attempt really to educate Paro. And the Rav said that the original plan was that actually Moshe Rabbeinu should go to Paro and should tell him about God and enlighten him about the source of the universe, and he should abandon all his magic. That's why every time they brought the magicians. Why did they bring the magicians every time? Because a person who doesn't want to leave a bad theory, a bad approach, he always tries to make sure to implement this approach that it works again. You see? Now when he saw when he saw the miracles that were occurring, immediately called a chatumen. Why? To reassure himself that his approach still works. They could do it too. Even though, of course, what they did was a joke compared to what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Was really like the whole, for instance, by the when the water turned to dam, was the whole water turned to dam. But the Mechashim couldn't do that. They could only, through magic, through trickery, make sleight of hand. They can make blood appear. I mean, people today could do these type of tricks. So, but what he wanted to do was to reassure himself. You see that his method still works. That's why you see when it didn't work, the kingdom didn't work, and then the other ones didn't work. So he got upset. But that's really what he was trying to do. He was trying to prove to himself that his method still works. But what was the original plan? The original plan was really that Moshe Rabbeinu should go to Paro. Paro should become convinced about the veracity of God. And then what he should do is he should send the Jews out for 3 days, and he should send Zvachim V'Olos with the Jews. And therefore, all the Egyptians would see that Paro really recognizes God. If they would see that Paro recognizes God, then they would abandon their witchcraft, and then they would accept God, and the Torah would have been given to everybody. That was really the original plan. That was Derech Shloshes, and that's why Moshe Rabbeinu said, Gam ata titin b'yadein zvachim v'olos. It wasn't that he was making an unreasonable demand. He's telling them that's really what your whole purpose was. You see. So that's really what went on in the... That's the whole idea. That was what was going on in the past couple of centuries, really, with Moshe Rabbeinu and the Makkos.
When Hashem said that he had to pass Mishpat on there?
Of course. I mean, God knew. God knew what the result would be, but that they wouldn't accept it. But the fact was that he gave them the opportunity. He wanted to give them the opportunity. It was Chesed Hashem to give them the opportunity to be able to see the true ideas, and they could also accept the Torah. But it didn't work that way.
Okay.
The fact is, I mean, that God knows in advance what choice a person is going to take. But nevertheless, it was presented to them. That was presented to them. The choice was presented to them. They had the ability. It wasn't simply that God was making. You see, the Rambam says, and all the Rishonim say, Farsay, how could God take away Paro's Bechira? So you see, he had Bechira in this situation. And it was, if he would have used his Bechira properly, he could have been a part of Kabbalah Satara. As you see, Erev Rav went in. They had Gerim from the Erev Rav, but in fact, he didn't. His bechira didn't use his bechira in the right way. But God knew that he wouldn't use the bechira in the right way. That was the avtocha. But the fact is, he could have done it. He could have used it. That's the Rambam's question. How is it possible that God knows the future and we still have bechira? But that's a separate thing altogether. Okay. Alright. Okay, so what we're doing is Parshas Rashi and Lech Lecha, okay? And the pasuk at the end of Noach says like this. Vayigach Terech as Avram Beno, Vyeslot Ben Horan Ben Beno, Vayisorai Kaloso Eshes Avram Beno, Vayetu Ita Meur Kathim, so they left Ur Kasdim. They were evicted, apparently, thrown out. So they came till the town Choron, and they stayed there. All right. Then the pasuk says, Tarach was to be 250. I mean, 205. Right. 205. Vayomas Tarach b'Charan. And Tarach died in Charan. Okay. Now you have one problem. Pasuk says, Vayomar Hashem al Avram, Lach lecha me'atzecha u'memoladetcha me'beis avicha. You should leave the land, your birthplace, and the house of your father. Okay? Now the problem is, he already left. Because they all left Ur Kasdim. So since they all left Ur Kasdim, so they were out already of his birthplace. That is, birthplace is not Charan. Birthplace is Ur Kasdim. So how could God say now, Lach lecha me'atzcham, he left already many years before. Alright? So Rashi asks the question. It says, me'atzcha, v'alo kvar yotza misham im aviv, v'bo'ad l'choron, elakach omalo. This is what he said to him. Yisrachek od misham, v'tzei mi'beis avicha. Go further away, remove yourself further from there. What do you mean remove yourself further from there? V'tzei mi'beis avicha. Says me'atzcha, me'atzcha, me'beis avicha. What is he saying? What is Rashi saying? Remove yourself further. I mean, he's out already. Okay? Alright. By the way, there's an interesting Rashi before. Rashi says, Vayomas Terach B'choron, Silacha Sheyotzav HaMechoron Abol Eretz Kenan, Vayosham Yosem Meshishim Shana, Shereksiv Avram Ben Chomesh Shana, Vayin Shana, Betzes HaMechoron. Actually, there was another 60, Terach really was going to live another 60 years in Haran. He stayed there. And Avram left before that. So why is the Pasuk is misleading? Because it says, Vayi may Sarah Chomesh Shana Masayim Shana Vayomas Terach B'Charan, you died in Charan, then Vayom Hashem Al Avram, Lech Kol Me'atzcha Meladcha. It would seem the implication would be that Terach died first, and then he told Avram to leave. No, Terach really was going to live another 60 years from that point. So Rashi says, why did the Torah do that? So he says like this, says, Shelo Yehi Adav Mefursim L'Kol, that this shouldn't be known publicly to everybody. The Yomru, when people will say, like, Kiyam Avram is Kibir Aviv. Sheinicha Zakein Vahalachla. Lefikach Kara Kasav Mace. Sherashem Avrain, Lefikach Kara Kasav Mace, Sherashem Avrain Kurim Mason. Okay. So at any rate, so what does Rashi say? So Rashi is an interesting thing. So Rashi says that, politically, hey, you see politics. Politically would not look good for Avram Avinu to have left his father, his old father, alone, and went to Eretz Canaan. You see? So that's why the Torah disguised it, really. The Torah disguised it. It shouldn't look bad for Avram. There was Mechayev. Aye, who was his father? It was another Vazar. It wasn't Mechayev in Kibarav. But still, emotionally, people don't look at it that way. Emotionally, people look at it like he has no. Look at how he treats his father, the old father. So that's why the Torah disguised it, that people shouldn't know really when he left, when Avram Avinu left. It's an interesting thing. It shows you that the importance that a person must, the concern a person must have for appearances, insofar as Torah is concerned. Even though in reality you may be justified doing something. You see, the Torah itself is very concerned about the appearance of things. It shouldn't lead people away from Torah, even though it's based on their emotions, but you should not lead people away from Torah when before their emotions can be educated to learn that they shouldn't follow these emotions. Because if you're going to do that, you'll never give anybody an opportunity. So you have to work with the person's emotions at the time, with the emotions of the Hamon. And you can't negate them, and you can't function with your on a level that might cause them to lack a respect for your ultimate objective. Even though you're functioning in the world of reality, you have to be able to function in terms of their reality, so that they shouldn't be turned off to Torah before they get a chance to see what it is. So you know, you see from this interesting thing. You see that from this pasuk, yes. As a matter of fact, you're right. That's a problem. Halacha is really, it's right in Shulchan Aruch that if people die that are a shayim, So it says that the instead of the Kerovim being Mesabel, it says the Ochlim, the Shosim, right? It's the. What? Right. Yeah. And really, in the Gemara says that Chizkiyo dragged the bones of his father, probably was of Odovazar, dragged them in the street, publicly. To show that you shouldn't have any respect for an Ovid of Odovazar, his own father. Right. That's the Gemara says. Yeah. And the Gemara says there's praise for it. It's a good question. So the question is, why don't you use politics in that situation? The answer is very simple. Yeah? The answer is like this. The answer is you cannot violate the principles of the system, the politics. There's no such thing as compromise. You never find a Navi you would compromise with the people. The Navi always gave the people Musar, but he'd never compromise, because you can't compromise the truth. There's one truth and there's no in between. So what the halal is like this, that if the father is an Ovid of Avodah Zara, so you cannot show him any respect, because by showing him respect, you're respecting that which he stands for, which is Avodah Zara. On the contrary. So then you have to show people that you have no respect for him. And the people are Rishoyim, you must demonstrate that we have no respect for such people. And that is the, on the contrary, that strengthens the system. Because that shows the people what these are the main ideas of the system. We can't, we show them that we can't compromise. That the main thing is in a person in the Kibbutz Avayim is Kavod Shemayim. That's the whole essence of Kibbutz Avayim, is Kavod Shemayim. So if there's no Kavod Shemayim, if his life was a degradation of Shemayim, then there's no respect for the parent. And that's what we have to show them. They have an emotion to respect the parents. No, we have to educate them. We have to show them that that's wrong. We cannot compromise. We cannot show any respect of Avodah Zarah. And they can't compromise because of their emotions. That we could never do. But where it doesn't involve a compromise, they cannot show any respect of Avodah Zarah. And they can't compromise because of their emotions. That we could never do. But where it doesn't involve a compromise, then you should, then you have to work with their emotions. And the truth of the matter is that's why the Torah was Magdim. Torah was Magdim because it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that Terech was an Ovid of Avodah Zarah. It doesn't mention anything about it. You know if you learn the Midrashim, so you know it. But the average person that looks at the Torah doesn't know this. And it would look to him like Avraham Avinu did something wrong. So therefore, the Torah wrote it in such a way that that to the superficial reader doesn't notice any problem here. You see?
Avraham gave him any great colors.
Well, if it was Muchach from the Torah that he was really a Rasha, then in a Hanami, then the Torah wouldn't change it. But it's not Muchach from the Torah he was a Rasha. So therefore, the rule is as follows, that we're doing an action. You cannot do an action to appeal to the masses' emotions where the action is detrimental. We are showing Anu Tavar Zohar, that's detrimental. We have to show we have no respect for that. But where it does not, where you are in compromising your own value system, then you have to do it. Then you have to do it. That's the rule. Right, now, let's take a look at Rashi. Lech lecho me'atzecho me'molatcho me'beis avicho. So Rashi says, getting back to the original problem, was he told him to go further. What do you mean go further? Rashi says like this. Rashi says, next Rashi, Asher Areka. He says to the land which I will show you, Logila lo ha'aretz miyad. He didn't show him the land right away. Why? Kedei lechavavah be'inav, in order to make it appealing in his eyes. V'loseis lo schar al kol dibur v'dibur, in order to give him reward on every single word. Okay, kiyotze bo, another similar case. You have like this: as binchos yichitcho asher ahavtos yitzcho. That he said to him, he said, I want you to take your son, your only one, the one you love, Yitzchak. Kiyotze bo, another case. Alachet haharim asher amar elecha. Over there also he said, you should take him to one of the mountains which I will show you. All right, kiyotze bo, similar. Ukura aleu asakria asher anochi daver elecha. When he told Yonah, he said to Yonah, he says, go, I want you to go to Nineveh, and I want you to say that Kriya, those words, those statements that I will tell you in the future. All right? Now, what was the purpose? What does Rashi say? This is all Kedei Lechabava Be'enav, in order to make it more appealing to him. And the question is, I mean, what does it mean, Kedei Lechabava Be'enav, in order to make it more appealing to him, and to give him Schara called Dibur V'Dibur? I mean, what is it... How is it mechab bavenav? How's that mechab bavenav? How does it make him more appealing to him? Alright? So what we wanted to say Yeah. Rashi says, Kodesh Baruch Hu mate or mashe tzaddikim lachach megal lahem v'chol zeh, why kedei laharbo scharon. God, he confuses the tzaddikim or doesn't tell them right away. Why? In order to increase their schar. V'chein, in the same way, ala'oretz asher ereka v'chein b'yono kroa le'as akriya. What is this? What is this Rashi talking about? So I want to say as follows, that Avraham Avinu was raised in the house of Avodah Zarah, and he raised himself to a higher level, to a level where he recognized that he recognized God, and he removed himself from all his physical attachments. Now, what the pasuk here is talking about is something which is a which is an important principle in the way a person relates to reality and relates to God. That what Rashi means is as follows: that you see, a person's nature is that he searches. He has an underlying search. There is something in the psyche of a man that has to have something that he attaches himself to, some source of security, something that he attaches himself to. There is a base in the psyche. A person isn't just a vacuum. There is something in the psyche that every person attaches himself to as giving him that sense of security, that this is, around this revolves everything, his thoughts, without the base, he simply can't work. He has to have some base, some reality, which he attaches himself to, which permits him to have a certain ease in life, that he feels a certain security. Whether it's true, whether it's not, doesn't make any difference, but he attaches himself to that certain something, and that's his base. From that base, he can operate. He can think. He can do. Of course, when things start shaking the base, he gets upset. He gets nervous. But he must have that base in order to function. That base could be different things, but usually it has to do. With most people, the sense of security has to do with something from their childhood. Because in some attachment, it may be a distortion, but it's something which goes back to the security that they had as a child. It goes back to that type of security. You see, for instance, this is really a big source of Avodah Zarah. Big source of Avodah Zarah. Because you see, all these primitive tribes, what do? They always try to protect themselves against impending disasters. And that's why they have these Avodah Zarah. That is no doubt the main reason. I mean, the reason is because they have to have this sense of security. So they see somebody get struck by lightning. How do you know it's not going to happen to me? A person can't live with the idea that it's going to happen to them. So therefore, they have to invent some type of mechanism, some type of protective device. You see. So it's something which man has to have in his nature in order to be able to exist with a certain psychological ease and calm. Now, what the pasuk says was like this: Lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimoladetecha me'beis avicha. You see, when they left Ur Kasdan originally. The family left Ur Kasdan, but you see, it says vayavo at charan vayeshu sham. What does it mean, vayavo ad charan vayeshu sham? It's a funny expression. They came until charan and they sat there. What do you mean? It means that was their goal, to go to charan, and they went there. Vayavo ad charan vayeshu sham, the implication is that they were really interested in going away from Ur Kasdan. They were interested in going away from Ur Kasdan. How far away did they go? They went till charan. And they stayed there. Why did they stop there? That wasn't their destination, really. They stopped there because they could only remove themselves emotionally. See, they had to be tied to the society of Ur Kasdan. Terach could not remove himself from Or Kasdan. He had to get out. It was political reasons. He had to leave. But he couldn't go away, really. He couldn't go away. He only went as far as he had to. Exactly. Vayavo ad Choron. He went as far as he had to. That's it. Now he's safe. And Vayesh Rishon, they stayed there. Why did they stay there? Because there, he could still be attached emotionally to Or Kasdan. See? It was really a psychological. Where a person lives is more a psychological phenomenon than a physical phenomenon. So he couldn't really remove himself. He couldn't envision. He had to always be associated with Or Kasdan. Why did he have to be associated with Or Kasdan? Because of his whole a person's society. You see, is really something which gives them that security. When a person's alone, he's frightened. Alone, he's all alone. He's fearful. Well, he has no security. But he's with other people, and he shares with them, and then they share in their ideas, and he feels we're all together. It gives him a certain sense of security. The security really is, it's a certain psychological security. So the pasuk said like this. God told Avraham Avinu, he said like this. Lech lecha me'aretzecha, u'mimoladetecha, u'mibeis avicha. It says, litein schar, loses lo schara kol dibur v'dibur. To give him reward for every single word. What does it mean? It means that every one of these things is an emotional, unconscious emotional attachment that a person has and serves as a source of security. Artsakha is land. There's a certain emotional attachment to your place. You go to a foreign country, you feel unnerved. I mean, this is not your place. See? Moladatakha. Moladatakha means it goes all the way back to early childhood. He was raised there. The experiences that a person has in early childhood, why does a person like to go back to his home? His home is a sense of, it gives him a source of security. That was the place where he had that security when he was young. So his parents at that time were the pillars of security that made him feel good. You see, it made him feel nothing to worry about. His security was in his parents. That's Moladatakha. Mi beis avicha. All the different expressions of Beis Avich is actually the source, actually. Atzcha, Moladcha, and Beis Avich are really, it's going from one step to another. It's a bigger circle, smaller circle than the smaller circle. Beis Avich, you see. So what God was telling Avraham Avinu really was, that's what Rashi says. He says that, Hisrachek od misham, v'tzei mi Beis Avich. That a person's underlying security is the emotional source from childhood. That's what he's looking for. That's the security. But a person who is a chacham abandons all those securities. He abandons them. And he only has one security. The security is God. Tzur HaOlam. So the pasuk says, Hashlech al Hashem Yehovcha v'hu yechalka lecha. A person looks for financial support. That's something which he had from early childhood. His parents gave it to him. Hashlech al Hashem Yehavcha. Your bundle, throw your bundle on God. What is your bundle? Your bundle is that need, that desire for security. You see, v'hu yechalka lecha. It means that a person should remove himself from the infantile emotional sources of his security. Now, what actually is the nature? I mean, it's difficult to describe it, but what is the nature of that security? It's where a person is at peace with himself because he knows that he's a part of a whole system of which God is the center, a whole system of reality. And really, there's nothing more to be insecure about. Nothing more to be insecure about. It's a different kind of security. It's difficult to describe it, but it's a security that he is in line with reality, with the ultimate reality. You see, that's the nature of that security. It's a different kind of security. So that's why this type of emotion, this type of change, is a process which takes a long time. It's not a process that can be done overnight. It's a process that takes a person a very long time, and if he makes a little bit of progress in that area, so he's doing very well, because it's a very difficult thing. And that really is a process of the total removal. You see, Avodah Zarah is a gross phenomena, which expresses the height of the primitive emotions. But even after Halachic Avodah Zarah, there still is a certain emotions that really are the same, draw from the same source. And the furthest removed from Avodah Zarah is the state of Avraham Avinu. He was in the highest form of perfection. That's why he was zeichet to mitzvahs milah, because he was in the highest form of perfection. So lech lecha me'atzcha me'ladcha me'beis avicha means Rashi says hach hisrachik od misham v'tzemi beis avicha. You've made certain moves with regard to this type of phenomena when you're in yourself, and you've made these improvements, but you have to go further. You have to go further. That's why he says, lo gila lo haaretz miyad. He didn't reveal the land to him. Why? It wasn't he didn't reveal the land to him? Because if he tell him another land, so then immediately he'd attach himself to that other land. See? He'd immediately attach himself. Kedei lachabav v'beinav. What does it mean lachabav v'beinav? Lachabav v'beinav is a qualitatively different kind of chibah. It doesn't mean that he'll love this land better. It means to say the chibah that Rashi is referring to is the chibah of Shal Mitzvah. The chibah of Shal Mitzvah is a different kind of a chibah. That chibah results from a person's ultimate relationship to God. And the ultimate relationship to God is where that need for security that man has finds its fulfillment in God. Lech lecha me'atzecha u'mimoladetecha u'mibeis avicha. Leave those infantile emotions of emotional sources of security, and that's why. And then once you establish this type of security, that's why he didn't tell him where. Didn't tell him where. Because if he knows where already, then the mind is, the nature of the emotion is to search out the substitute. It would search out a substitute. So he didn't tell him where. So therefore it leaves him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Masha, Masha Tzadike. Masha means they're astounded. They're astounded, momentarily astounded. But why? Why does God do that? Because the Tzadik, when he's astounded, that's where he finds his perfection. Then he finds himself. And if he finds himself, that's the same thing with Yonah, Rashi says, and the same thing with the same thing when he took Yitzchak. Alach ad haram. Alach ad haram. Where? Didn't even want to say where. His mind can't attach itself to anything. Yonah also. By Yonah Kroy Lazakri. It means that what do you want me to tell that nation? It'd be nice if he'd know. So prepare himself, he'd know in advance how they're gonna accept it, how can he work it out, you know, what they're gonna do when he comes there. No, Kroy Lazakri, you go. I'll tell you what you're going to say later. It means that you have to totally rely on the source of reality, on God. See? That's what the memra says. So, the truth of the matter is that in the following sukkah it says, Ve'escha l'goy godol, va'vorecha va'gadlo shemecha ve'yei bracha, that God said to Avraham Avinu, make him into a great person. So, the truth of the matter is that greatness is precisely the emotion that can destroy this perfection. Because the emotion of greatness is where the person finds his security in his own glory, in his own greatness. See, that really is, that's where the man himself becomes the Avodah Zarah. You see, that really is the most dangerous phenomena for a person's perfection. So what the Pasuk says is like this, that before this bracha was received, Avraham Avinu, Ve'eschol l'goy gadol v'avarecho v'agadlo shemecha v'yei bracha v'avorcha m'vorachecho m'kalelcho or v'nivru v'cho kol mishpacha v'sadama. Avraham Avinu was a person that changed the whole world. I mean, even the Gaisha world today, the whole ethical world was changed from Avraham Avinu. He was the man that was responsible for the entire change. Even though they have a corrupted system, but you see they have some type of ethics, and whatever they do have really comes from Avraham Avinu. He was the one that changed the world. He was the one that established the whole change, made the change in terms of ethics, and that change exists today because of him, in the whole world, not just by us. The entire world benefited from him. But there was one problem. And Avraham Avinu was going to become a great person if he didn't remove those emotions, those sources that have a need for security and find themselves in primitive expression. If that wasn't removed, there'd be a danger that his greatness would, on the contrary, would harm him. Because then he'd attach himself to, those emotions would attach themselves to his own greatness. And this would be the most harmful thing to Avraham Avinu. That's why God told him, no. Hisrachik old mi beis avicha. You have to remove yourself further from those emotions. Then being an instrument of greatness will not relate to your own emotional needs. On the contrary, you don't need it. It's just a means for others, for the establishment of Klal Yisrael. Okay. Yeah, there's one more thing you see from this. One more thing you see from this is that the removal of the emotions has to be piecemeal. It has to be step by step. Piecemeal, step by step. Because first it has to be Atzcha, Mimalatcha, Mibesavicha. You can't remove these emotions in one shot. Same thing with Bincha. Bincha, remove yourself from the idea of Bincha. Yechidcha, Asher Ahavta, Es Yitzchak. See, each one, litein tzchara kol dibur v'dibur, means that every one is a step in the breakdown of that emotion. Breakdown of the emotion. That's what has to be step by step.